Okay, good morning. Thank you for coming in what I guess is the equivalent of a graveyard slot for a festival. I came last time to EMF, really enjoyed all the talks, and I was in a weird position 2 years ago because I was currently transitioning from one career to another, and I just thought, well, maybe this is relevant enough that I could try and pitch a talk, and they accepted it, so here I am. I'm not really sure how this is going to go. I have given this talk before. I wrote a lot of it this morning, so hopefully it'll be okay. I would also say that I have actually have a goal with this talk, so I'm really hoping that at least one person goes away and ends up working in the space industry after this talk. And I have a slight advantage because I can see one of my colleagues, I think, is over here somewhere. So at least that way, I've already got one in the bag. Okay, so my name is Neil. I didn't used to work in the space industry, and now I do. And the thing that really changed that was that I joined a makerspace. In the description, I wrote down that it was 6 years ago. I looked it up last night, going through all my photos, and actually it was 4 years between joining a makerspace and ending up as a space engineer. And there's a direct line between the two, so that's kind of what I wanted to get into. I'm not really going to talk too much about where I work, because it's not an advert, but this is the company that I work for. It's called Spaceforge. We're based over in Cardiff, in Wales. It's an in-space manufacturing company, and if you want to know more about what we do, this is the basic diagram. Ooh, that way. We're doing returnable and reusable spacecraft, so it's a really interesting thing to work on, and these spacecraft are designed to make stuff in space, so they are like a factory in space. And then this is the best bit, my favourite bit, is the... it's going to start from the beginning. Okay, forget that, that's not worth it. I didn't test that video before I started. Okay, so how did I end up where I am now to where I was? So I thought I'd start with the bad news, which was my route was probably the most obvious, but not necessarily the easiest way in. So this is me now. This was me in what looks like the early 1970s, but is actually 2006, doing an undergraduate degree in physics. So I had an advantage. Now, for context, there's about 20 years between these photographs. So I did a degree a long time ago, went off and did a completely different job. I worked in education, and then went, no, I'd really like to go and do this based on my experience at Hackspace, but that doesn't mean I had an advantage because I was going in with a STEM degree to start with. So if you already have one of those and you're thinking about going to the space industry, you're at an advantage already. There are other ways in and I will cover them. So yeah, the bulk of this talk is how did I go from this to this, and not just how did I end up looking that much older. So I did this. I went to Cranfield University and did a one-year master's. So a lot of space jobs will specify on the application master's in space engineering or related field. The main reason I did this was because I was thinking about being an astronaut. I'm still thinking about being an astronaut, but time is running out. But you need to do that. You need one. You need at least a master's degree in a related field and 3 years industry experience. And so that's like a bare minimum. You can't apply with less than that. So I am now 1.5 years in. So I've only got another 1.5 years to go, and then I'm allowed to be an astronaut if everything lines up. It's very unlikely, but I just wanted the chance to apply more than anything. So this is one of the courses in the UK that really funnels people straight into the space industry. So if you are in that position where you go like, well, I've already got a university degree, kind of feel like working in the space industry, and I've got lots of time on my hands and £15,000 I don't know what to do with. £11,000 is better value than that. But this is something you could do, okay? So it's not the only way in, but this is the most direct route. You spend 1 year doing this course or 2 years part-time, and you will walk into a space job with no problem at all. I'll come back to that in a bit. So for me, I've gone too fast. Right, I'm gonna give up with the phone remote control that doesn't work as well as I thought it would. Okay, so for me, this process started here. So this is Cardiff Hackspace. It's about 40% of Cardiff Hackspace. We have another room that we call the clean room, which is not that clean, but it's cleaner than this. And then a little room for our sort of laser stuff. But it was my first ever exposure to engineering. So I'd done a physics degree, which is very tidy, and then I went into doing engineering for the first time, and it was a big eye-opener. And actually, this is my first thing I did ever. So it's a David Bowie cross Jigglypuff coaster. Took me the best part of about 3 or 4 hours, I think, to make. About the best I could possibly do. In fact, actually, it's starting to look kind of impressive to me now. I don't think I've done anything this good since. But it gives you an example of, like, where was I on skills, right? To work in something like the space sector, you're not expecting to be a world-class engineer, especially not immediately. Basic skills is all that you need. And just to give you another context for, like, where are my engineering skills, this is the second thing that I did. I wanted to contribute to my space, so I built a clock for the Hackspace. It is not a work of art, and I also, for those of you that know Hackspaces, will know that the H is at a 60-degree, 30-degree angle, and I didn't pay enough attention to that, so spot what's wrong with that clock. But, you know, it kind of fits in with the vibe, right? So this is the level of my ability to design and make stuff, right? It's very, very low. So, forgetting the route that I just talked about, the academic route in space engineering, why do I think makerspaces are useful? Right? Now, having done a year and a half in the space industry, here are the things that I think you've learned from being in a makerspace that help you in a job in the space industry, and you put on your CV to say that you know you do them. Right? So the first thing you've learned is patience. This is something that is a critical requirement if you're going to work in the space industry, because they're big, big projects. I learned this personally through this project. So this was me in February 2020. I decided that I was going to build a bench for my partner who has an allotment. She wanted a bench to go on the allotment. And I had some timber that was lying around at the Hackspace and a couple of old pallets. And I was like, great, I'll make you a pallet bench. I'll just cut it out, we'll put it together, a few weeks, and we'll be done. Maybe a few nights. So this is February 2020, I'm just getting the frame together with the nice timber that I had, and I'd managed to assemble the timber to something of a frame by a month later, March 2020. So this initial estimate of, okay, a few nights, maybe a few weeks, is looking very good. Obviously, I was slightly slowed down by the pandemic at this point, but not as much as you might expect. By May 2020, I think I got to the point where the frame was done. I mean, there's not much has changed there, right? Then I started sanding stuff and cutting up pallets. Turns out getting pallets apart and making stuff from pallets is an awful idea. So August 2020, I actually started to get some pallets on this thing. Sanded it down by October 2020, and then I had to do the rest of the frame. So now we're at February 2021. Got to actually, like, you know, stain the whole thing several times. So now we're at May 2021, and oh, where's the final picture gone? I overwrote. So this is the problem of doing stuff last minute. I've overwritten the final picture of it in place. So you'll have to imagine a picture of this bench on a very nice looking allotment in June 2021, about 15 months after I initially thought it would be done. So this is pretty common. My example from the space industry would be this one. This is the a mirror tile from the James Webb Space Telescope. So you probably recognize it more in place over here. So picture on the left is getting this thing, starting to construct it. This is well after you've started designing it, right? And you know, you're actually on the way to having your telescope. Right? Well, the picture on the right is before launch, 2021. And the picture on the left, when they built the first mirror tile, 2011. So there's 10 years between, you know, actually starting to build something and it being ready. Design work on this started in 2007, I think, and like initial kind of plans and things was all the way back in the late 90s. And launch was, I'll get my numbers right here, I think January 2022, was it Christmas Day, wasn't it? Christmas Day 2021. Long, long, long projects. So the Hackspace, the Makerspace will have at least taught you that, okay? Number two. This is a bit more of a serious point. You will have practical experience. Now, if you have been to university and done a course on engineering, you'll notice that more and more it's getting harder and harder to get hands-on experience. The course that I did, I didn't get to see a single piece of hardware for an entire year, right? So everything is just paper-based. So a makerspace will let you get hands-on with equipment in a way that you'll never get out of an academic course. And so I asked the other guys in my Hackspace for sort of stuff they'd done that might help me here. So this is Dave from my Hackspace working on, I'm not even sure what he was doing. I think he's building an espresso machine or trying to improve the espresso machine that we have. So how is this useful? Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's exactly the same as a rocket engine. But you can see where there's the similarities, right? Like, actually getting to work with pressurized systems, you know, like working with metals, like welding, and they're all relevant stuff. And, you know, I mean, I see people in the space industry now that, you know, if you're just starting out, you don't know all this, right? You haven't actually had a chance to get hands-on with things. So that experience you'll gain is really valuable, especially, you know, if you work on the design side, knowing roughly how these things work in practice is a massive, massive boost. Okay, so what else have you learned by being in this space? Well, the big one, timelines always move to the right. This is a saying that I hear a lot in the space industry. In space, things just take longer. And I was asking around again from people, and Kieran in my hack space was giving me the example of his CNC project. So in 2020, he started building a CNC. Here's how it looked in 2020. I asked, well, how does it look in 2024? It looks like this. This is not at all uncommon in the space industry. Not just do things take a long time, but things just stop for long periods of time, right? That can be because of regulatory issues, can be because of budget issues. So if you're looking back at my people I work with on my course, my lecturers from that course, you know, they've all been in the space industry 20, 30, 40 years, some of them. My supervisor on my master's project is telling me that, you know, he's been in the space industry 30 years, he's had one thing go to space. Right, so it's hard. You've got to push through to get things happening. One of my other lecturers was working on stuff where he was sort of saying, you know, he's been pushing a project for I think 15 years now, and it's still in the looking for funding stage. So this is just, you know, you've got to be fairly bloody minded and just keep things going forward. Okay, most important lesson I think for me: you don't know what you don't know. So I think the unofficial motto of Cardiff Hackspace is, I didn't think it would be this difficult. Not sure how to put that into Latin, but if someone knows how to, please come and tell me in the Q&A afterwards in the tent. So by this I mean, when you're starting something hard, you don't know what the problems are going to be when you start, right? You kind of guess at them, and then you find them out as you go along. So I've seen a lot of examples of this in the space industry. You know, even where I work, we're trying to do something that no one's ever done before. So every time you sort of move a step onwards, you've achieved something, but you've also uncovered a whole bunch of problems that you didn't know existed and no one else did. And that's sort of natural. Best example for me, which is actually not very complimentary, was this project. So around the same time that I was joining the MakerSpace, obviously I got an Ender 3, because everybody did. Also started, basically my new life was just, you know, tending to the Ender 3 like some very precious animal. And this was the biggest project I'd ever done. I had an attic space that was very, very hot, and a portable air conditioner, but also cats, and cats that weren't allowed to go outside. So I needed a way of getting my air conditioner to vent through a window without the cat also being able to get out of the window. So very niche problem, I thought, and I solved it by designing this thing. So bearing in mind, this is two years after I joined the Makerspace, I was first doing engineering stuff. So I thought I was a genius. Connected my portable air conditioner to it. The portable air conditioner lasted about an hour. And then because it turns out, as I didn't know at the time, I'm just compressing all of the airflow that's meant to go through a tube about this big into something about this big. And that turns out to be really bad for air conditioners. And the air conditioner basically just couldn't get enough airflow going through it, or I guess overheated or something. It looks like I lost a lot of coolant coming out of there. It was bad, 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 right? But that is not the moral of the story, right? I didn't know what I was doing, and I only found out by doing it what was wrong. But I wasn't the only one, because a few weeks after this, I got a message from a friend, and I'd forgotten that I'd put this on Thingiverse. And it turned up on the front page. So this is in, I guess, the height of quite a warm summer in the US. And at this point, there's 1,440 people have liked it. This wasn't the end. I never took a screenshot of how far I got. It ended up as number 2 on Thingiverse. It now stands at 4,000 downloads. And like the poor people in the comments, you know, they're like, oh, actually, this broke my air conditioner because it stopped working afterwards. Can you help me? I had one guy who messaged me. He said, I've tried printing this 8 times and it keeps failing at the end. Can you advise me? And I'm like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. I also got my favorite one on this, a message about half a year later. From a guy in Germany who'd spotted that somebody was had ripped it off and was selling it commercially. So they were injection molding my design and selling it, which, you know, I like to think that I'm responsible for quite a lot of destruction of air conditioning units around the world at this point, but all based on the fact that, like, you know, you don't know what you're doing to begin with, and that's just, I guess you have to sort of be tolerant of that. Which kind of brings me to point number five, and I only actually have 5 points here, so there are many more, but I didn't get around to making slides for them. So learning from failure, very, very important, right? You've got to make mistakes and then learn from them. So I have for you from Cardiff Hackspace, from Dave at Cardiff Hackspace, a story in three parts. Part number one, finding a 2mm tap, and enjoying showing how to hand tap and how a pro would tap things. And then finding out that actually that's not how pros do it. And now you have to find out how pros remove broken M2 taps. And then finding out how pros actually do stuff, which is machine taps. Probably a common experience for a lot of people is doing it, getting very excited, and then finding out you were doing it wrong and having to go out and find out how it's done the right way. And the space industry is an obvious place for doing this because you think, well, everything's really expensive. How can you sort of approach this? But mistakes made early are a lot cheaper than mistakes made late. And I guess most of you will be thinking the obvious example of this would be SpaceX, right? And I can't deny that they are very, very good at blowing stuff up early on so you don't blow it up later. And that's a really good approach. So this would be the early Starship tests, you know, where we've now seen amazing stuff coming out of them. So there we go. So the skills, and I'm being slightly facetious about some of this stuff, but genuinely these are skills that you should put on your CV if you're applying for a space job, but you've been in a makerspace or you've just been building projects yourself. They're things that not everybody has, especially if you're up competing against sort of, you know, people who are straight out of university or something and you haven't done that. This is, makes you competitive. So where do you go, right? I've got just a few things to finish with, really, and where you go I think is an important one. So the UK is full of space companies, right? People don't realise that. There are about 1,300 space companies in the UK. Right? Now, some of those are tiny. They're going to be like 1-2 man places. Some of them are going to be quite big. You know, you're going to be working at somewhere like Thales Alenia Space. But there are, you know, there's a big range of options to choose from. So I'm just going to pick out a few that I would recommend. So the Sky Aurora, if you're interested in working up in Scotland, this is a launch company who are looking to launch out of Saxeford in Scotland. They're going along at a really good pace, looking very good. Obviously, a really exciting place. If you're interested in working in propulsion stuff and you don't want to move to Boca Chica, then this is an option for you. If you're interested more in the stuff, doing stuff which in space, I would find it difficult not to recommend Astroscale. They're doing really interesting things. It's a Japanese company, but they've got a big base in the UK. And they're working on close proximity operations of spacecraft that are autonomous. So getting robot spacecraft to move next to other spacecraft. And a part of that is for deorbiting debris. And part of it is for servicing spacecraft that are actually in operation. So this is in the UK. They're based around Oxford. And you can just go and work for them now, right? I couldn't find from AAC Clyde Space up in Glasgow, I couldn't find an obvious picture of a CubeSat in operation. So this is like a random publicity picture from the website. But I mean, hey, it looks cool. And this is they work on a lot of CubeSat technology. So they'll either make CubeSats or provide parts for CubeSats. There's a lot of stuff around the sort of Glasgow area in very small satellites. And likewise, I couldn't find a logo on this picture anywhere, but this is Surrey Satellite Technology, a pioneer of what we call small sats. So small sat is basically anything from about like kind of washing machine size to car sized. And it was pioneered in the UK. Like, these were the first guys really doing stuff. So yeah, you can just, again, there are loads of jobs going at the moment. That's an interesting point, actually. Every time I go to space kind of meetup stuff, the question always arises, how do we get more people to apply to the space industry? And I think that's something, the main thing that we haven't really gone across to people is that there are loads and loads of jobs available in the space industry. And no one looks, because I think they think, like, well, it would be cool, but I'm never going to get to do that. So there is a really good tool out there for helping you assess that. And there's a website called spacecareers.uk. I'm not responsible for it, even though it's brilliant. But I would highly recommend you go take a look. And it's a website that basically catalogues not just open jobs, but also lots of advice around kind of skills and general job hunting advice. So I just had a look yesterday to see what jobs are on there, and I pulled this one up because I thought it was relevant. So this is working at Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, the space bit of it, around Oxfordshire, so we have a big cluster, a place called Harwell in Oxfordshire. This is a junior support engineer. Okay, so if you're later in your career, this is probably not going to be the job for you because you're thinking about, well, I'd like to be paid more. But one thing I just wanted to pull out was that the pay is quite reasonable. It's like 30 grand a year. And best in specification, no specification of academic qualifications. So if you haven't been and done an academic engineering degree, this is still a relevant job you can go for. You just need to demonstrate some of the skills they're looking for, which actually can come from a makerspace environment, especially if you start getting involved in slightly more formal stuff, like you get involved in risk assessing for your hackspace. That would be that's a really valuable thing to be able to go and put on a CV afterwards. Okay, so in the last couple of minutes here, if you did want to end up going and doing a course, there are three courses that I kind of recommend. So the one is the Cranfield one. You can basically go anywhere in the space industry for meetups, and if you sort of start going, anyone from Cranfield, you'd be like one in three people will put their hands up. It's a lot of people go through that course. There's also one at Southampton University. This is a master's course, but if you're younger and you want to do undergraduate, they do an undergraduate one as well. So this is like a good way of converting if you want to do the master's course from one thing to another. I forgot to grab a picture. But there's also one at Leicester University, but they focus much more on like instruments for scientific probes and stuff, because that's kind of what Leicester do a lot of. But those are the three big ones. There are others around, and there's also sort of other smaller things. And if you want to know more about it, come and ask me in the Q&A. And just to finish off, there's kind of a circular thing about my journey to the space industry that's been quite fun, in that I went to a makerspace. I thought it was quite cool doing some of this stuff, so I went and did a course, I got a job, and then they sent me back to the makerspace because we needed somebody to build a model of the spacecraft. So here's me back in Cardiff Hackspace building our model, and exciting for me was that here's Tim Peake 4 or 5 months ago posing with my model. I don't know what he thinks about it, his face doesn't look that impressed, but he was a really nice guy and it was nice to meet him, and it was cool to have this picture with my model on it built in Cardiff Hackspace. Okay, so yeah, that's everything I have to say. I think I finished a little bit short, but if you've got Q&A, I'll be in the Q&A tent after I'm led over there. And yeah, thank you very much for coming.